Ron Sexsmith, after an absence of around 2 years, welcome back to the Mouthcast. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How's yourself?
I'm very good. It's nice to speak to you again. As I said, it's been a couple of years since we last podcasted together. That was around the time of your previous album, Carousel One.
Yeah.
The new one, The Last Rider, is out. And before we talk, we'll listen to something from it. This is Who We Are Right Now.
www.themouthmagazine.com.
That was Who We Are Right Now, a wonderful song from the new album, The Last Rider. It's a very interesting album in that after 14 or so records, this is basically your first band album. So what prompted that particular shift?
Well, it's the first album I've made with my touring band, you know. I mean, in the past, I would generally go to wherever the producer was, like LA or something, or England. And they would have their own sort of stable of musicians, and I would use them, mostly because I just couldn't afford to fly my band over somewhere, like to L.A. for a month and pay for their hotels and everything, while I'm also paying for records. So this album we did in Canada at a studio where we could all live and eat and record for a week. And I've always wanted to do an album with them because they're great musicians, but it just, I think it, basically what happened is I ended up producing it with my drummer, Don. So for the first time, we were able to make it happen.
And I guess over the years, having worked with various producers on all those other records, you learned the tricks of the trade, as it were.
Yeah, I hope I did. I mean, I definitely, when I was in the studio, I sort of felt, oh, I know what I'm doing. I know how these songs are supposed to go, at least, you know.
Yeah, yeah. As the writer, how different was your process, if you like, working in this new context? Did you feel that the pressure was off somewhat, or the...
Yeah, the recording vibe definitely had a looseness to it that in the past, the albums, they sort of feel like you're making a movie, right? Where the producer goes, okay, action, you know, and everybody's, you're sort of on edge a little bit. But, you know, I was surrounded by my friends and my band. It just felt kind of effortless, you know. We were just sort of laughing most of the time. Yeah, there was a bit of pressure when that, I've never had the responsibility before producing, so I missed having someone else saying, oh, I think you need to do that again or whatever, you know, and I had to sort of be that guy, right? So,
yeah.
But,
yeah.
But my drummer, Don, is a producer, and he's done many records, so he sort of had my back throughout, you know. But it was just, we had so much work to do. We had 8 days to get 18 songs recorded, so we didn't have a lot of time for second-guessing things. We just sort of plowed right through it, you know.
Yeah. I'm interested that you mentioned, as an analogy, the film directors. It immediately made me think of Stanley Kubrick on the set of The Shining, firing off guns to get a scared enough performance out of everybody.
Less extreme, but it's a bit like that, you know. It's exciting recording because, the way we do it, because all my albums have been done pretty much live, so it is like you're acting, you're about to do a scene, you know, and everybody's trying not to screw it up, you know.
Does the writing come naturally to you, do you find, or do you have to sort of batten down the hatches and craft it out? I've always wondered whether it was carefully crafted, painstakingly done, or whether it just tumbles out of you.
Well, it's actually both, you know, because you get a certain amount that comes naturally. You know, you get this, you know, original spark or whatever it is, this idea, and that could only, and that might be a one line, you know, or
yeah,
maybe it's
yeah.
You can get a good chorus with no verse ideas, you know, but whatever it is, it comes pretty easily, you know, and oftentimes it comes with a melodic idea, and that happens when I'm doing the dishes or walking around,
right.
But whatever it is, it leaves you and leaves you with this little fragment that you have to finish, and that's when the sort of batten down the hatches stuff comes in,
yeah.
When you have to use whatever knowledge you have of craft and all that. But, you know, I've been doing it a while now, so I know that you can't really force it. You just have to work at it and be patient. And usually I'm working on about 10 or 15 songs at the same time.
Right.
So you see what happens is you start to get a sense that an album is taking shape. And usually you don't notice it right away, but usually there's some kind of thread to it just by nature of where you are, you know, in your life, I guess.
Yeah, your own personal context sort of thing.
Yeah.
Are there particular things that you look for when you're writing? You know, are there moments when you think, okay, this is a great idea, but it's not really a Ron Sexsmith song?
Oh, definitely. It's kind of hard to explain, but I think when I'm writing, I'm sort of looking for a sense of when something is familiar. It's not like you're ripping anybody off, but I look for this sense that the song, like almost that it already existed or something,
yeah,
that it's meant to be. It's kind of hard to explain. Usually that's when I sort of know that I'm in the zone or that it belongs to me or something. Because obviously, you know, I'm a product of my influences and it's in my DNA. All these great writers, these pop writers like Ray Davies or Nilsson or whoever. But I do look for that feeling of whatever it is, fate or something, you know, and also there's certain, I guess I write a certain kind of song and I can oftentimes recognize that I'm writing a sort of, if I can say it, you know, like a classic Ron Sexsmith song, you know,
yeah,
sometimes
yeah.
I feel I'm here I am again. I'm doing, not that I'm writing Secret Heart again, but it's something that is familiar to me, you know? And so that's what I'm into, you know, other people are out there trying to write something that's just like never been heard before. I don't know how to do that. For me, it's all about lyric and melody.
It's interesting that you use the word familiarity when talking about the writing, because I think Elton John and Bernie Taupin, all of those songs that they wrote together. I was just listening to an early 70s vinyl copy of Elton John's Greatest Hits earlier this afternoon. Stuff like Goodbye Yellow Brick Road and Your Song and all of that. And the first time you hear those songs, you feel as though you know them, don't you?
Exactly, and that's how I felt when I heard the Ray Davies for the first time, or the Beatles. There's something like, they were so catchy or something right away. Yeah, it's like you've lived another life or something. And actually, it's funny you mention Elton John, because I was a member of his fan club as a kid. You know, I had all the records
right,
and stuff.
Right.
And the thing I loved about Elton John albums is he opened up and there was his band. He would always have photos of his band on the inside. Because for that, there was that 6 or 7 album period where it was Nigel, Davey, and Dee Murray, you know, and Elton. And they were such this, there was kind of this amazing, they were doing like 2 albums a year, I think, right? And so when I was doing this album, that was definitely on my mind. I was trying to make almost like a classic Elton John album, you know, with my band and their harmonies and all that stuff. So it was very much inspired by albums like Goodbye Yellow Brick Road or Captain Fantastic even, you know.
Every last star in the night, from my window I would wish upon with all my might, till in that darkness I knew every wish had come true, every last one. Some pray when all is lost, hoping to find God is listening, but the weary voice deep in my mind says, who am I kidding?
Aesthetic level, this new album of yours is really interesting. The cover features you and your bandmates in a sort of Last Supper tableau, which made me laugh a lot. I thought this is typical Ron and his sense of humour, but it also made me think that perhaps you've reached a point where you'd be content to kind of sink into this band format and not necessarily put out what some people might consider traditional Ron Sexsmith records. Not that you are hiding in any way, but maybe that you're looking for a way to evolve.
For me, it was just sort of a play on, you know, or an homage or whatever to The Last Supper. Because, you know, the band Rider is what we get in our dressing rooms, right, with the wine and everything. So I thought, well, maybe we could find a dressing room somewhere and sit in there. But, you know, when I knew we were going out to the country to record, I brought along all these bathrobes with me, you know. And I thought, I didn't even tell the guys, because I was hoping they would be cool with it. But I was just saying, hey, guys, I have this idea. This could look really stupid. Let's just try it. And if, you know, who knows, maybe we'll get a good cover. So it just happened that it sort of worked, you know. And the guys were totally up for it. But the thing is, the other thing that was on my mind was, I've been making, you know, this is my 15th album, and I thought, I've been thinking lately it'd be good to maybe step away for a while just from recording, you know, and just play shows. You know, I've been doing an album almost every 2 years since 95, and I'm still writing like crazy, but I just thought it might be nice to step away for like 5 years or 6 years and just play shows and just see where it's all going, because obviously it's all changed in a way, you know. It's still expensive to make records, but now the way they roll out albums, like there were five songs on the internet 2 months before my album even came out, you know.
So
the way they do it now, I'm not really that pleased with, you know. And I don't think they've really come up with a business model that sort of works, where, because it's still expensive, but you know, people don't obviously buy records the way they used to. So anyway, I just thought if I can, to resist the urge of making another record for a while, I would like that. Because I certainly have enough albums for people to digest if they haven't heard of me. But anyway, that's the other reason why I was thought The Last Rider would be a good title. And definitely not my last album, because I love albums and I'm writing. But if I can, I'd like to step aside for a while.
I was going to ask you, in a way, about stepping aside. I wondered if you ever got bored. Really, I know that's quite a flippant word, and
yeah,
it doesn't really do justice to the question I'm asking, but I wondered if after that 20 years, two albums, you know, an album every 2 years thing, whether you ever just wanted to switch off the creative drive and the effort to tour and all of that, and just, I don't know, go work in a bookshop or go flip burgers or something, I don't know.
I've just written a book, actually, a novel that's coming out in September, but but that's a whole other thing. But I've never got bored, because, like I say, it's like usually I'd be writing songs while I was out touring an album, you know. So by the time the tour was over, I'd have my whole next album written, you know. So sometimes it felt like a bit of a curse and a blessing, you know, because even I'd get discouraged with the industry and I would want to pack it in. And this happens to a lot of artists, you know, they're like, oh, I'm never making another record. But then you start writing again and you get excited and you get your hopes up again. And so you, and I've had some albums, you know, I had an album called Long Player, Late Bloomer that did quite well.
You know,
but the three albums prior to that one kind of just came out and died the next day. And I was really discouraged. But then Long Player comes along, and it sort of, I felt it gave my career a boost and a shot in the arm, and that got me excited again. And so there's been these peaks and valleys in my career where I felt like things were happening, and where other times where I felt that I didn't exist almost. And so, but it was never boring. It was frustrating and disheartening, but I still love playing. I don't like airports and things like that, but I love playing concerts with my band. And so we're, you know, here we are, we're just about to head overseas again. It's obviously, it's a scarier world now. And whenever I tour, all I think about is just getting my band to all these places and back home safely, you know, because I feel responsible for them. So,
well, thinking about travel there, since we last spoke, you've moved, you've left Toronto, left the house in which you spent many years. I've heard it described as the best city in the world.
Oh, really?
So it must have been quite a wrench to leave.
Yeah.
There's that Kate Bush track, One Last Look Around the House Before We Go. I don't know if you know that track.
But
it's a really short instrumental, maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And I always wondered, like, the overwhelming accumulation of all the memories and all the emotions connected to those memories of a particular place was almost too much to actually set down in lyrical form, you know, so it had to be instrumental. So I wondered whether you work on instrumental pieces sometimes, because, you know, you have this fantastic facility for words, but perhaps sometimes there are things that can't be said in words.
Well, I had an album called Exit Strategy in 2008, I think, and there were two instrumentals on that record, one called Spiritude and one called Don Anna. But in general, I mean, I guess I could, you know, but usually I'm writing as a combination of lyric and melody. So it definitely interests me writing. I'd like to write more instrumentals, you know. But I did have that moment when I left my house for the last time in Toronto, you know, when I'm closing the door for the last time. It got quite emotional because I just sort of thought, you know, I wrote 6 albums in that house, and I turned 40 there, and I turned 50 there. So yeah. That's a lot of living. Also wrote a novel in that house, so it's like it is heavy, you know. And I haven't written a song about it. The closest thing on this album is the song called "Man at the Gate," which is kind of my farewell to Toronto song. But yeah, it is a lot to put into words for sure, and I probably never will.
Okay. Ron, I'm going to play out with Breakfast Ethereal, a track from the album.
Okay.
It's your last record, Carousel One, featured a rather touching song about a dog, and this one has this really rather wonderful, nostalgic song about a junior football team, Breakfast Ethereal, the song. I love that you've tripped the switch there with this and taken the listeners straight back to childhood.
Yeah.
I can only presume that the song is autobiographical. Do you find yourself looking back much?
Yeah, and I do. I guess I maybe always have, but now at 53, I tend to be more wistful about things. And that song especially, and the radio as well, as the other very nostalgic song on the album.
Yeah.
But Breakfast Ethereal was just all about that feeling of the magic of childhood, you know, how you just wake up every day and you're just so excited to be alive and, you know, and excited about your next soccer game or whatever it is, you know. And then the contrast between that and the black and white TV in our living room, what we'd be watching Coronation Street or something, and it just seemed like a whole other planet. So I was just trying to put all that into words. And I mean, soccer or football, as you guys call it over there, was one of the only sports that I was good at. And that one particular year, we won every game, you know. And there's a photo of me at my parents' house with the championship trophy, you know, and one of those early highlights of my life, you know.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What a great place to end. Ron Sexsmith, champion.
There you go. There's your headline. It was great talking to you.
You too, Ron. It was a pleasure once again. And good luck with all the dates that come off this record. And have a nice rest of the day, sir.
Yeah, you too. Take care now.
In my life as a child, I wore the stripes. Playing inside right as the captain of the St. Catherine's Imperials. With dumb luck running wild, we won the cup. Waking up every day to love and a bowl of Breakfast Ethereal. From a soft-focused world where tomorrow seemed bright, to the black and the white TV light of some dreadful soap opera serial. From a scrape to a scar, we left little doubt. From the inside out, we were healing ourselves with Breakfast Ethereal. Did we gain in return? But a lesson that we'd already learned. Remember the first time we saw with our own eyes. We saw with our own eyes. Oh. As the sorrowful leaves fall at our feet, all the sadness is sweet, and the trees and the sunlight are seemingly spiritual. I'd love to wake up again and imagine it all through the mind of a child as the day runs wild with breakfast and cereal. Breakfast and cereal.
www.themouthmagazine.com